Chapter 2. The governor's mansion was located in Springfield, but because of the huge number of state employees, not to mention registered voters in Chicago, most governors maintained a residence there too, on the taxpayer's dime, of course. And Governor Clemen L. Walker was no different. He kept a beautiful 1920 tri-level on the Gold Coast. The governor himself was short in stature, but long in mythology. It was said while he was a Chicago precinct committeeman, he had seen more than one uncooperative political crony chained and dumped in nearby Lake Michigan, and that, while he was quick to pull the trigger on politicians of the opposite political party, he was equally as quick to head up a dozen charitable drives a year. His favorite charities were the ones that got the big headlines: veterans and orphans, and dying children without insurance. He was known to have a huge heart, it was true, but he was just as well known for having a heavy hand when it came to running his state. He was red-faced from his booze and cigars and high stress levels. A week before the Ermeline Ransom incident, the governor was in his private study, reclined in a leather chair, whiskey and water in hand, a Cuban cigar burning nearby, enjoying the trouncing the bears were handing to the cowboys. Occasionally he would check his Rolex. Bang Bang Molinari was already a half hour late, and Clemen L. Walker was beginning to wonder if the man was late simply because something unexpected had come up, or was his late arrival aimed at proving a point about his sovereignty from the governor. He took another drag off the rolled Cuban tobacco leaves. "The best," he murmured and rolled the cigar in his fingers admiringly. He closed his pale blue eyes, savoring what few Americans got to savor anymore: Cuban smoke. Within 2 minutes, one of his three cell phones rang. It was Robert K. Anastasio, the Illinois Attorney General.
"Bob, I'm going to need to talk to you for about 10 minutes tomorrow. Confidential, my office."
"Done. What time?"
"Noon. We'll have lunch brought in. You still like the oysters?"
"I do. Should I bring any files along?"
"Bring what you have on Victor Harrow."
"Who?"
"Victor Harrow of Harrow and Sons. He's a two-bit contractor out of orbit. He has the contract in the Springfield-Chicago run."
"Name doesn't ring a bell. We need to control him?"
"We do. And if we can't do it through your office, I'll have to go to the mat with him."
"Anything I should look for?" said the AG.
"We need to figure out where he's vulnerable. He's stiffing us."
"How far behind?"
"The contract is 75% paid out. We're in it for half. He's paid us less than one-fourth. Word is, he's done and refuses to pay another dime. This cannot continue. Either the AG's office of Bang Bang is going to have to enforce."
"Another cowboy?"
Yeah. He's got a wild hair from somewhere. You know what I always say."
"A wild hair from somewhere."
"See you at noon, then."
Ricardo Bang Bang Molinari was the namesake and head of the Molinari mob. This was the mob that controlled Chicago, operating primarily out of Skokie, where the key labor unions and building trades offices were located. Like the governor, Bang Bang also lived on the Gold Coast, except while the governor's residence was English countryside and consisted of a home and attached three-car, Molinari's spread was a historic register enclave walled in by indigenous rock and mortar, and consisted of a 10,000-square-foot home and four outbuildings, including a guest house where his bodyguards passed their off time with high-stakes poker, craps, and a steady stream of Michigan Avenue hookers whose arrivals and departures spanned about 1 hour apiece. Bang Bang left home that day, handcuffed to a Halliburton aluminum briefcase. He exited the gates in a bulletproof Cadillac sedan. He was backed up by a Cadillac SUV, bristling with guns behind blackout windows. The windows were illegal, but the cops knew better than to hassle one of the governor's key friends. In short, Bang Bang was immune. He enforced the governor's state contracts. In return, the governor protected Bang Bang's crime syndicate. That's the way it had been done for 100 years in Chicago, and it wasn't ever going to change. Not as long as the Chicago politicians and the Chicago mob were in charge and running things. Bang Bang's entourage headed southeast, toward Lake Michigan. As they clipped along at 21 over and careened around corners, a lookout was kept for other cars that might try to cut them off or follow too close. Those idiots were menaced with a gun barrel or a killer stare down from one of the vehicles. Mostly, though, the people of Chicago knew that there were certain cars and certain neighbors one simply did not approach. To do so was to risk life and limb. At 3:45, Bang Bang's procession screeched into the governor's lot and proceeded to park. A small army of Illinois state policemen, all burly and scowling, peered inside the cars and cautiously allowed the visitors to exit their vehicles. they were prudently searched but allowed to retain their firearms unless going inside to meet with the governor. Bang Bang was first out. The briefcase dangled from his wrist while his hands went on top of the car. He was frisked by an angry-looking sergeant. A state trooper escorted him to a side door of the governor's house and knocked twice. An interior state trooper took him from there. The leftover police and mobsters lolled around the two black vehicles. They smoked. They engaged in stare-downs. Nobody minded. Everybody stared right back. Here were nature's natural enemies come together on solemn ground, where the outside rules didn't apply, where the lions let the lions alone. There was a high degree of mutual respect and mutual distaste. Each group had its orders. You better damn well get along with the other side if you want to keep working this easy duty. Everyone obeyed. At the end of the day, it was easy and safe duty. No one would ever be insane enough to make an attempt on either the governor or on Bang Bang. Bang Bang Molinari followed the state trooper into the governor's office.
"Morning, Your Honor,"
he snarled at the governor, upset that he had been called away from family on a Sunday. His son was home for midterm break from Harvard, where he was pre-law, and his twin daughters were home from the University of Illinois in Urbana.
"You're looking old today,"
the governor said, and choked on laughter. Bang Bang was in his early 50s and had come up in the mob the hard way. He had started out running numbers and girls in Chicago's West Side, and then he caught the eye of Jimmy Novellisi, a lieutenant in the mob who was an expert at cargo hijacking from O'Hare International. Bang Bang had become wealthy exploiting interstate freight and gunning down those who interfered. He was tall, wore his black hair combed straight back, and his teeth were perfect. His smile stopped the ladies cold. He had never had a love problem. They all adored and worshipped him, and he was very generous with the gifts ladies like. Cartier, Australian pink diamonds, a lady's best friend, Rolex, all of the good names found their ways onto his lady's fingers, necks, and wrists.
"Hello, Bangman,"
the governor said, using his pet name for the mob boss.
"We got problems getting me out this cold Sunday?"
"We do. We got some customers who are neglecting their payments to our little fund."
"What? We couldn't do this Monday?"
"I'm leaving for the governor's conference in San Francisco after lunch tomorrow. Too late."
"Don't worry. I've only got three names for you."
"I'm listening. Who's first?"
The governor pulled a page from the back of the legal pad on his desk.
"Great Lakes Underpass and Overpass, LLC. Late as always."
"Gluo again. I warned that son of a bitch to keep up with his contracts. How much?"
"Well, I'm down for $150K for the month, and Gluo's portion is $35K.
"Got it," said Bang Bang. "A call from me will jar this guy loose. Next?"
"Midland Freeway and Secondary. They have four paving jobs open east of Springfield, and the management has changed due to shareholders' restructure. The new owner is playing dumb, like he's never heard of us."
"We'll visit him first thing in the morning. We'll make sure he understands the program. How much we light?"
$50K, give or take five. $50K makes me happy at this point."
"Done. Who's the third?"
"A nobody out of orbit. Name of Victor Harrow. Harrow and Sons Construction."
"Poor Victor. He picked a damn poor time to stop paying if he's the reason I'm out here on Sunday."
"He's a large part of the reason. He's into me for 110.
"The 110 G's?
"That's right."
Bang Bang spread his hands.
"Look, you gotta tell me these things right away. This guy's way over on the skim. He'll cry like a pig when we demand the whole play up front."
"Let him cry. My people tell me he's been paid 3/4 on his bid contract. There's only about a 1/4 left. And he says enough. He says he's done with us. We're in for half. He's paid less than a fourth."
"Stupid SOB. What do you want from me here?"
"Just put the fear in him. He's a nobody. He's high profile in his crapola little town."
"Johnny Blades?"
"Johnny's perfect. Just don't break anything on the guy. We only need him scared. And tell Johnny not to come back without at least $50K on him. Persistence is what this is going to take. Johnny might be down there a couple days."
Bang Bang smiled.
"You don't know Johnny. He can say more to a man in 30 seconds than anyone I've ever known. And I've known plenty."
"I don't doubt that, Bang Man. I don't doubt that."
"So, what else we got?"
"Well, like I say, I'm $150K light this month. Make it a happy holiday for me, eh?"
"Done. Until next time."
The governor's eyes narrowed. He gave Bang Bang his coldest look.
"Aren't you forgetting something?"
he said, holding up his hand while his face glowed red.
"Don't you have a little something for me?"
Bang Bang smiled and opened the briefcase.
He pulled out a stack of banded $100 bills and bounced them against his knee.
It's all there, 75K, all from yesterday, all from Michigan Avenue.
Bless those merchants. They're going to be very happy when we allow them to open for Black Friday on Thanksgiving Day. They deserve no less.
Black Friday, Pink Tuesday, who gives a damn?
I do, Bangman. I do.